Erev Tov. First, just wanted to give a thank you to Paul for opening your house. Thank you very much. As always, thank you again. I don't think I even mentioned the last couple of weeks also. Thank you to all the hosts. We very much appreciate it. We should continue to be able to go Mechayel El Chayel. Two other announcements quickly. Two other quick announcements. Number one, I think we will not be going as late tonight as we did last week, even though last week was a wonderful marathon, Baruch Hashem. I think we all had a very enjoyable time. But some other people in our families may not have had such a wonderful time waiting for us. So we're gonna aim for about approximately an hour from start to finish today. We might go a few minutes over, but that's the plan, God willing. Do you mind keeping your watch over here also? My watch is still not the biggest stand. What'd you say? Good one, right? That'll be the next question. Can we have a shiver right after? Okay. Right, throw the watch out, then we're finished. Announcement number two. Just wanted to mention also, as Yitz pointed out to me, just to remember that one of the main central goals of these shiurim is to hopefully help our community, those of us, all of us really need in some form, to break out of our economic woes and not... Baruch Hashem, some of us... We all have, thank God, we're all doing okay. But whatever economic recovery that our community needs, and all of us that need it here, and anybody else that we know elsewhere, and the rest of Am Yisrael and the world, this shiur and all these series of shiur are dedicated to everybody's to help everybody, and that should be our kavana. That what we're doing here is again hopefully going to help us with an economic yeshua and the spiritual yeshua as well. So tonight's shiur, as you probably have seen, is going to be based on questions related to Shabbos and the workplace, Shabbos and business. Did I title this? Here. You look at the title on the top of the source sheet here, so I titled it, "Of course I don't work on Shabbos, but... dot, dot, dot." Meaning, obviously, none of us are going to actually be doing work on Shabbos. Thank God, I think we're all pretty much firm in our keeping of Shmira Shabbos in its basic form. But there are plenty of issues that do arise when it comes to business and the workforce and issues of Hilchos Shabbos. So what we have here, if you look at a number of the scenarios, all these scenarios are issues that have to do with work, business, and Shabbos. There are plenty of other cases and topics as well that are related to Shabbos observance that we will not be discussing tonight in depth. I think most of them, I think what I noticed is that the scenarios that I had thrown out that were not chosen for ones that people felt were the most common or the ones that I think more pertain to chutz laretz. So we're going to avoid those tonight, but just so you're aware of what some of them are, one of them has to do with having Jews and non-Jews working together as part of a company. So the question is, who owns, let's say, a business if the business is making money on Shabbos? So who's getting that money? Are you getting that money? Maybe your partner's getting that money. How do you decide those kinds of questions? And questions of schar Shabbos, of earning money on Shabbos. You are not allowed, a Jew is not allowed to earn money from business done on Shabbos. That's one major issue which arises when it comes to Shabbos. Again, I think that's more common in chutz laretz than here. Again, we're not going to have so much time to deal with that question tonight, but that's one major issue. And the other question I threw out was also an interesting question that had to do with internet websites. What if you have an internet site that does business on Shabbos? People go on and they order things, they buy things, they pay for it with credit cards, with PayPal, whatever it is. That takes place on Shabbos. Is that also... What'd you say? B&H doesn't. Baruch Hashem. Right? Or Bracha Batzlacha. Sorry. Bracha Batzlacha. That's how they do it. What'd you say? So there are different ways of doing it. But the problem is that you can make a lot of money on your website on Shabbos, and people want to know if it's closed on Shabbos, they might say, forget with this website altogether. I don't really know when it's going to be on, when it's going to be off, or if it is. Whatever the case might be, that's a major question when it comes to internet websites.
Business, but when we were in Australia, we had to register for something on an Israeli government website involved putting your credit card on. And we even got the BA Shliach came around because we didn't understand the site. We didn't understand why it wasn't working. And they came around and looked at Shabbos and we were trying to get it to work. And even with the BA Shliach there, we couldn't get it to work until we realized that it was still Shabbos in Israel.
Wow.
And we were blown away by this.
Baruch Hashem.
The Israeli government wouldn't take our money.
You sound surprised.
It depends what kind of issues. Certain issues that they do that for, and other issues they don't care about.
Joining
the
chance to do a penalty and get
right.
Lots of Shabbat in Israel, they collect it all five.
Yeah, right. Looked at everything. Yeah. So that would be ideal. There are questions, some very interesting halachic discussions when it comes to that question, which we are, again, not going to deal with tonight. If you want to have another share on that some later point, feel free to recommend that. And again, there are ways around that as well. There are ways of turning off the slavery on Shabbos. Recommend it. Okay, so we'll take a vote again in a couple of weeks. But there are other things also, other discussions that maybe they can have, that you can sort of pay for something, but the actual money is delayed in terms of when it actually goes into the credit card account. They can have a delayed reaction by a day or two. There are options. There's a very, very interesting article, if you're interested, in the RJJ Journal. Not this one, but one of the more recent ones that I have at home by Rabbi Al Cohen from New York. He wrote a whole article about it, a very, very interesting article. So those are two modern, very contemporary issues when it comes to business and halacha relating to Shabbos. Those are the two that we're not going to focus on tonight. What are we going to focus on tonight? So if you look at the scenarios, so the first major scenario, which we'll spend a few minutes discussing, is scenario number one. Just read it inside. I must send an important fax or email to someone in the U.S. May I send it after Shabbos is over in Israel, but it's still Shabbos in the U.S.? Is that permitted? So let's start with this case. Who can suggest what the possible problem here might be? Well, if you wanted to get to the core of the issue here, how would you analyze this type of question of whether this case is okay or not? You don't need to give an answer, just an analysis.
It depends whether you think the recipient is going to read it.
Okay, so that's going to be maybe a side question, a very important side question, but that's going to be a sort of a second-level question. The second-level question is going to be, well, if he's going to read it, then you might have a serious problem. If he's not going to read it, maybe it's going to be better. Before we get to that point, let's just discuss...
Is the recipient Jewish?
Okay. From the question that I'm asking here, the recipient is...
Where you are or where you...
Okay, let's repeat the question again. My point of writing this question was referring to a case where the recipient is not Jewish. The recipient being Jewish will be included in all of the rest of the scenarios, which deal with telephone calls and things like that, but certainly the same question will apply as well to faxing and emailing. Maybe it'll be better or worse, but... Let's try one at a time here. Okay. Jonathan?
I mean, is it obvious that the person knows that you're sending the email or the fax after Shabbos? Could they mistake you for having sent it on Shabbos?
I don't
know that that's
think
that
so.
Question.
I don't think so, though. I could hear that question. Yeah, the assumption here, again, I didn't make it clear, but the assumption here is that the recipient is not Jewish, where the recipient is living in New York. In New York, let's say that there are Jews in New York. Yes, let's assume that you know that his name is Smith or something. I don't know, that you know that he's not Jewish.
The question is, how many in the family?
Even if he were Jewish, I'd say that the difference between a text and an email.
You might be right. We'll have to get to that. Okay, let's hold off on that question for a few more minutes. One step at a time.
I mean, you're not doing any Shabbos, for sure.
Okay.
Even though it's getting there, but might be, because it's an important email, it might be a different email or something like that.
Okay, so let's deal with the major issue first.
He's going to go to the office anyway. He's not going to go to his home generally. He's going to go to his office. He's not going to be there anyway.
If Shabbos in America and paper is spitting out of a fax machine in America because of something you've
done. But that's a result of something.
You've dialed the number, and as a result, a piece of paper is spitting out of a machine in America on the Shabbos in America.
So where's Shabbos called? The Gufa or in the capital?
Would that be the question?
Okay. Let's start with that. All the other issues that were brought up are all important, but they're somewhat of side issues, which may affect the halacha in certain cases. But the main issue that we need to start with is the question is, if you wanted to put it in terms of a lamda shel chakira, is the isser of Shabbos, the isser of doing malacha, chal, does it apply only to the gavra? Is it only on the person? Or is it also, or I guess in addition, is it also on the chefza? What's the idea? So the idea is exactly this type of situation. Would you say that if you live, let's say, in Israel, and in Israel it's 12 a.m. or 11 p.m. Saturday night, you send a fax, well, let's start with a fax, right? Email we'll get to in a second. Let's start with the case of a fax. You send a fax to New York, where, what time is it? It's 4 p.m. in New York. Shabbos is not going to be over for another 3 hours. What happens in New York when you send that fax? As Ben said and whoever else said, the fax machine, the lights start flashing, the paper starts coming through, things are happening. That is certainly some sort of violation of a malacha. We won't go into exactly what the violation is. There are different possibilities. It may be a problem of hashmas kol. It doesn't matter what it is. The point is that there is a... What did you say? Okay, some form of kotev also. Very good. It could be a form of writing. Whatever it is, the bottom line is that an electronic type of device is doing something on Shabbos that is... If you did it, it wouldn't be allowed. So that's the question. Is The cheftza, do you look at the device?
Shabbos is where you are, not where.
Oh, so that's the question. That's the question. So is there an idea of only following where the person is, or do we say no, if the person causes an action to take place on Shabbos somewhere else, that maybe that action, had he done it in the same place that the device was, maybe that would be problematic. That's the question. All right? The answer you might think is simple. I think, what's the vote here? Who thinks that this is okay and who thinks this is not okay? Okay. So who can explain to me why they think it's okay?
Well, probably we're talking about chesed. I mean, you could take an example of a Shabbos clock, where you don't even have the problem with the geographic. Shabbos clock. I've got a Shabbos clock. It comes on that will do a malacha from you, which will turn off my lights. But obviously, it's a sur, but I'm allowed to do it.
Right. Okay.
So here, the fact that I'm doing something, which is permissible. I'm telling a fact, obviously, I'm permitted to do it. The fact that somewhere else on Shabbos it's doing something which is.
Right.
is related to what I'm doing, but obviously the Easter isn't there because the fact is doing it, let's say it's doing it by itself. Obviously it's being triggered by something which I'm doing, but I'm doing it, I'm permitted to do what I'm doing. The fact that the fax machine in New York is doing whatever it's doing is because that's how it's programmed.
It's received a call.
It's the same way as a time clock, the pin will reach the time and it'll turn off the light. So here the fax machine has received a call and it does what it's supposed to do.
Excellent. Okay. So if we want to compare it to, let's say, the case of a timer. So most poskim say that a timer is, technically speaking, permitted to use on Shabbos. Not everybody agrees with this, but everybody would agree that Me'ikar HaDin, that the strict halacha would be that a timer is okay. The ones that disagree with this, Rav Schechter, we'll get to this in a few minutes on this source here. Rav Schechter has some problems with that. But the major concern there is that as long as you're not doing any malacha on Shabbos, it's going to be permitted to set a timer. Rav Moshe Feinstein has certain issues with what he calls zilzul Shabbos. It's degrading to Shabbos to have things going on in your house which, okay, you didn't do anything, but suddenly your TV turns on. Then the next second, your radio goes on. Then the next second, your dishwasher goes on. Then the next second, your computer starts going on with all the latest news. That's not Shabbos. You've lost the spirit of Shabbos. Rav Moshe is not very happy with the issue of timers. However, even Rav Moshe recognizes that this is not what we would call a strict halachic issue in the sense of doing malacha. Rav Moshe's idea of zilzul Shabbos is based on the Gemara, but it's sort of what you would call more of an idea of the spirit of Shabbos. It's not one of the 39 malachos, let's say. So when it comes to the actual idea of malacha, almost all the poskim can essentially agree that timers are permitted. When it comes to this case also, we're going to assume that timers are permitted. What is the basis for this? So the basis for this is essentially what we've been saying until now, that the halacha of Shabbos is really, generally speaking, assumed to be a halacha on the gavra and not on the chefza. It's based on the person and not based on the utensils. Let's take a look at one or two of these sources here, and then you can ask more questions. So let's take a look here. Baruch Shekivanta. So let's look at the first section of sources here. Section number one on the back side of the page. So two very important sources when it comes to this issue, just so you know where some of this is coming from. So the Shulchan Aruch says, actually, we'll go the other direction. Start with the second source. The second source is really first in terms of the conceptual order here. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. Tanu Rabbanan. The rabbis taught, Poskim Mayim Lagina Erev Shabbos Im Chasheicha. You're allowed to sort of take a stream of water, let's say like a dam or something, and open up, let's say, from a larger body of water, take some sort of dam type of devices and direct that water into your garden on Friday afternoon as it's getting dark. What's going to happen afterwards? Then the entire day of Shabbos, that water is going to be flowing towards your garden, and it's going to be watering your garden. What's wrong with that? What malacha is that? Planting, zoreah. Good. Zoreah, planting, includes the watering your garden. So here, the Braisa says that this is permitted. You're also allowed to put some sort of spices or incense underneath your utensils on Erev Shabbos. Even though at the end of Shabbos, as Shabbos continues, so these types of utensils are going to end up with some sort of perfume or scent, which is actually usher as well on Shabbos. To give something a certain type of scent is also usher. Maybe only Durabanan, but that's also usher on Shabbos. We don't have to read the rest of the cases here, but you get the idea. What's the point of this, Bryce? So the point is that if you do some sort of action on Friday afternoon, which then leads to that action continuing on Shabbos itself, when the malacha would be violated, that is halachically permitted according to the Braisa, because the assumption is that as long as your action did not take place on Shabbos itself, then that's permitted. You started it on Friday, the action continues on Shabbos, that's going to be permitted. Now, as David pointed out, that is actually, that source did not get on the sheet here, but this is indeed a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. That is in the Mishnah, which comes on the previous daf, I believe, on Yezayim and Beis. Beis Shammai appears to disagree with that principle, but Beis Hillel appears to support it. That's, according to Beis Shammai, it could be that if you start before Shabbos and the malacha continues on Shabbos without your assistance, that may still be a problem, but Beis Hillel certainly agrees with the Braisa here that as long as you did not perform any action itself on Shabbos, that's going to be permitted. Let's go back now to the first source in this section, in the Shulchan Aruch, and so in Reish Mem Vav, which complements the same idea, but presents it in a slightly different way, which the Gemara also discusses. I just picked out a couple lines in the Gemara here, but the Shulchan Aruch captures the other words later in the Gemara, which are important for us to understand. Mutar lahashil lahaskir kelev le'enu Yehudi, you are permitted to lend or to rent out your utensils to a non-Jew, even though he is doing malacha with your utensils on Shabbos. Why is that permitted? Because who is the Isser on here? Is the Isser on you doing malacha on Shabbos, or is it on your utensils that you own, your devices doing malacha on Shabbos? So the Shulchan Aruch says, because we are not commanded to prevent our kelim, our utensils or devices, from doing malacha on Shabbos. It's permitted for our kelim to do utensils on Shabbos as long as we are not the ones doing the malacha with them. The Shulchan Aruch continues to discuss something which is a little bit different. We don't need the rest of it for now.
Is that loaning for money or just loaning?
This is talking about, it could be either one. Lahashil is usually without money to lend something, and lahaskir is usually to rent it out for money. It doesn't...
That doesn't make sense to our animals.
So Shvisas Behema is a bit of a different story. Shvisas Behema, letting your animal rest, is maybe different. That's the special pasuk for in the Torah. There's a big discussion about exactly what level of Isser Shvisas Behema is. My Rebbe and Yair Rosenzweig used to love to give chaburas on this topic when we had in the Kol Elyon. So he spent 3 hours talking about Shvisas Behema one time. A very, very interesting discussion. But that may be different than Shvisas Kalim. So yes, I guess you don't have like the horse. Who has the horse in Yad Binyamin?
The Alamo.
So that's a question. So I think they know this already, but that's a question. To do things with your animal on Shabbos is much more problematic. For us now, I think we're going to stick to the topic of fax machines and computers and not deal with the horses and the donkeys, if that's okay with you. For Shvisas Kalim, generally speaking, the halacha is that it's permitted. Again, in the Gemara, it's not so simple. The Gemara has a back and forth debate about this question, but this is certainly how we paskin. That's permitted. So one could certainly suggest that based on this sugya, what would you say in the case that we've been discussing? If the fax machine is going off somewhere where it's Shabbos, as long as you, where you are living, it's not Shabbos, what should be the halacha here? Should be that it's permitted. Certainly it should be permitted. And maybe, again, we could even go a step farther, as we mentioned before, that even the whole idea of Shvisas Kalim, even the one that would permit Shvisas, that would forbid Shvisas Kalim, maybe they also would say that that's only true if you are in the same place, that's Shabbos for you as well. But if you're standing somewhere, if you're living somewhere where it's not Shabbos for you and you cause something to happen in a place where it is Shabbos, maybe all the opinions would agree that that's not not necessarily a problem.
It is different. It's different. It is a direct, real-time action on Shabbos.
The difference is that one is time before, one is time after. Your action is
everything else is prepared for
you. But it's not on Shabbos for you.
Somewhere where it is Shabbos, you are directly...
Understood. That.
If I can just add to what Ben's saying, I mean the difference between this sugya, what's being spoken about over here, and our question is that over here you're doing something before, in the time before, is our situation we're doing time after. Meaning your Shabbos hasn't come in yet. Yeah. We're doing it after Shabbos. I mean, I'm not a physicist in terms of a concept of time, but
okay, so you're right. There is a difference between those two things. I don't know conceptually that we would necessarily differentiate between those two categories. There may be a different way of differentiating between our situation and the situation in the Gemara, which we'll get to in just a minute.
Well, so, good to say, because they're both initiated at a time when it's permissible.
Right.
And the fact that it's being done in another time zone or another later on in the day or whatever the case would be that is causing other reactions.
That's the comparison. I mean, that's the reason why you would say that it's permitted. Let's give me a few more minutes, and then if we have more questions, we can deal with them a little bit more in a few minutes. So if you look at this source sheet now, the one that's from the Daf HaKashrus. Is anybody here familiar with the Daf HaKashrus? This is I'm sorry, there may not have been enough to go around. They only had 10 copies. I apologize, you'll have to share. So the Dava Kashrus, as it says on the top here, is a monthly newsletter for the OU. Everybody here has heard of the OU, the Orthodox Union, right? Everybody's heard of that. Rabbinic Field Representative. It's basically something that the OU puts out every month for their people, their rabbinic coordinators in the field, but plenty of other people look at it as well. You can find it online. I enjoy looking at it as well. There's lots of interesting things that you can find in these Dava Kashruses. So this one particularly is from a couple of years ago. So this discussion here, as you can see, is about faxing and emailing on Friday afternoon. So the question in question one is, may one fax a letter or send an email to Eretz Yisrael on Friday afternoon after Shabbos has already begun in Eretz Yisrael? The reverse case, exactly. It's the reverse case. So if you look here, so Rav Yisrael Belsky is one of the major poskim for the OU. He also is a Rosh Shiva and Torah Vadas in Brooklyn. So he quotes Rav Yashav here that this is permitted because it is Friday for the person sending the fax or the email. There is nothing wrong with causing the fax machine or computer server in Eretz Yisrael to perform malacha because there is no obligation that our machines rest on Shabbos. As it says in the parentheses, we are not mitzuva, we're not commanded on Shvisas Kalim. This is essentially exactly what we have said till now from the sources that we saw. That's question number one here. Let's hold off. I'm looking at the rest of these questions, even though they're also very interesting. You can skim them yourselves if you like. For now, I just want to get to the second opinion here. That is the consensus of the majority of poskim, or Belsky says here. That is the general normative psak. However, there is an interesting discussion here, which I don't know if we're going to read the whole thing in Hebrew, but we'll read a couple lines here in Hebrew from Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter, of course, is one of my rabbim from YU. Rav Herschel Schechter is also one of the OU's major poskim as well. So Rav Schechter found a way to be machmir here. What does that mean? He found a way to be machmir. You can look inside with me if you like. Everybody looks in the second column here, right, where the Hebrew part starts. I'm not going to read the whole thing in Hebrew, but I'm going to try to read at least this paragraph here. Rav Schechter says as follows: Lishloach fax be'erev Shabbos l'makom asher shama kvar hischila haShabbos. Let's say you send a fax on Friday afternoon to a place where it's already Shabbos. Yesh makom lahachmir. He says there might be a reason to be machmir here. Kimavur b'sifro shall Professor Ze'ev Lev Sheyichya. As Professor Ze'ev Lev, who wrote a sefer, he's also affiliated with Machon Lev. I don't remember. I think he's not alive anymore. I don't remember. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, so he wrote a sefer that has to do with electronics on Shabbos, and he brings down the following issue, Dehainu, as follows. Devasov parak aleph to Shabbos, that at the end of the first parak of Shabbos, Nechalku be'shamay u'be'shillel, be'shamay and be'shillel debate, imutr lahaschil melacha be'erev Shabbos, if you are allowed to permit to begin a malacha on Friday afternoon, shiyam shich el tocha Shabbos, that will continue into Shabbos. That's essentially the case that we saw before in the Gemara and similar cases in the Mishnah there, which I didn't have on the source sheet, that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel debate. V'kaimalon ladino k'Beis Hillel u'demutar. We pass it like Beis Hillel. Now, listen to this. V'yesh makom lomar, one could suggest as follows. Dafilu l'Beis Hillel, asur l'sader be'erev Shabbos, sham lacha taschil be'emtzah Shabbos. Maybe Beis Hillel only says that it's permitted to have a malacha continue on Shabbos if you began the malacha when? On Friday. But let's say that you rigged the malacha you did whatever preparatory things you had to do on Friday afternoon, but when does the malacha actually start? It only starts on Shabbos. Maybe Beis Hillel would say in that situation that's true. More of a problem. What do you mean?
Because when you set a timer, the timer is moving.
Good. Yeah. So what do you think Rav Schechter is going to say here?
I don't know yet.
So we'll see in a second. So that's an excellent point. That the timer, according to what Rav Schechter is arguing here, a timer might also be a problem. Let's continue. Uvadavar hazeh nechleku ha-gedolim lefnei kishmonim shana. Rav Schechter says that about 80 years ago, the gedolim debated this point. The rubam hichriu lahakel, and the majority of them decided that this was permitted. So you have, I have in my notes here somewhere, most of the poskim say that that's permitted. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, I believe, said it was okay. There's a number of poskim that said that was okay. However, he says, based on this, Yesh lanu she'one Shabbos ha'madlikim neiros chashmalios be'emtzah ha'Shabbos. That's the heter for why we are allowed to use Shabbos timers, that the timer turns on Shabbos itself. Now, here's the interesting part. After that took place in the early 1900s, they found a manuscript of the Rambam's explanation of the Gemara in Shabbos. The Rambam apparently had written some explanations on the Gemara as well, Miksabiyad, from manuscript. Bo Nimsa, they found in his explanation of the Gemara, Sof Perak Aleph Kedasa Oshim, that apparently the way that the Rambam read the Gemara, which we're not going to go into now, but the Rambam apparently read the Gemara to mean exactly the same way as the other approach, that as long as you rig the malacha to start on Shabbos itself, even if you prepared it on Friday, but the malacha didn't actually begin until Shabbos, then that would be problematic. So then what do you do? You find that the halacha has already essentially been paskin, but then we find the girsa of the Rambam. The Rambam was a very, very important rishon that he says it's aser. What do you do now? So look what he says. V'chlitu ha-gedolim. So the gedolim decided, and this, by the way, is a very general hashkafic issue as well, which comes up a number of other times. If you've already accepted a psak, and then later you find manuscripts which seem to disagree, or you find that things that, let's say, the girsa that we had in the text of the Rambam, there are a number of cases like this. We had the wrong text, and the Shulchan Aruch, the Pasuk, and a certain halach on the Rambam, in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, and I forgot what the context was, the Shulchan Aruch had the faulty text of the Rambam, and later on they discovered that the Rambam really said exactly the opposite. And had Rav Yosef Kara known that, he also would have reversed his psak. What do you do today? Do we switch the norm of psak or not? Very interesting issue. We're not going to get into it now. The general consensus is that we don't switch the psak, but there are those that disagree. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg wanted to suggest something about this. The Chazon Ish was, in this case, the conservative with the lowercase. He was not in favor of changing Piskei Halacha in cases like that. A very fascinating machlokas. In this case, what happens here? V'achlitu ha-gedolom zimei'achar shekvar yechriyu hadavar al-pi ruv, kodem shenoda lehem mi'aksav yadahu, that since they had already decided, according to the majority of the Rabbanim at the time, before they discovered this ksavya, this manuscript, she shoyer ha-heter b'mkom, the heter, the permissive ruling, should remain in its place. And then in the parentheses here, he quotes from Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, who is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, who discussed this issue as well in one of his svarim. Achen, he says, however, Be'igros Moshe and Rav Moshe Feinstein Sefer, Yotza Hagan Rav Moshe Feinstein, Bechumra Neged Ishtamshus Beshon Shabbos. He comes out, Lechumra, he's Machmir on using a Shabbos timer. Shalolu Sadera Shetaschil HaMalacha Be'emza HaShabbos. That you shouldn't begin the Malacha in the middle of Shabbos. Elim Ken Yesh Badaver Mishum Kavod Shabbos, unless there's an issue of Kavod Shabbos, Kigon Hadlokas Hanura HaChashmalis HaNiskar Le'elo Kayotze Bezeh, unless it's an issue of turning on lights that you need for Shabbos, etc., etc. So again, Rav Moshe Feinstein's Shuvah is very, very interesting. Rav Moshe has a number of points there. This is one of Rav Moshe's points, but again, that needs to be fleshed out a little more, which we're not going to do now. But Rav Shachter says, according to this, Ulefi Zenire, She'enu Nachol Nishloach HaFax HaNiskar Le'elo. He says it's improper to send the fax. Shahare ani gorim kan be'erev Shabbos shamalocha taschil shama be'emza Shabbos. Because I am causing something to take place in a place where it's Shabbos, I am causing that malacha to begin there in the middle of Shabbos. That's Rav Shechter's argument. Any comments before we go on? Any brief comments?
You could set up the whole malacha, including setting the timer.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. The question is, what Rav Shechter is pointing out here is that when does the malacha actually take place? When does the light actually go on? When does your air conditioning go on, or whatever it is?
When does the water actually soak into the ground?
Yeah. No, so in that case it's different because there the water is already soaking into the ground Friday afternoon.
Here,
no malacha is taking place when before the timer goes on. The timer is just ticking and ticking, whatever it is, but nothing is actually happening.
You set the timer.
Yeah, what's the timer supposed to do? It's supposed to turn on the light. It's supposed to turn on whatever.
What he's saying is basically he's blowing away grama, the whole idea of grama. He's blowing it away completely.
No.
Because that's what a Shabbos clock is.
Yeah.
You start the malacha, it starts going, and then poof, it goes on.
Okay.
I move the thing on the seat, and then a couple seconds later, it's saying that
if you call something immediately or not immediately, he's not blowing it away.
He would still accept the idea of grama in general, but grama in general, I guess he would say, yeah.
Do you think he's looking at it differently because this is a fax into Israel where people are more likely to be Jewish as opposed
no,
to
no,
a
no.
fax out?
I don't think so. I don't think that matters. I think his point here is essentially a halachic point, that any time that you cause a malacha to take place on Shabbos, then that's going to be problematic. He will accept the idea of grama in general if whatever action you did, again, it's sort of ironic here, and this has to be discussed a little more, which we're not going to do now. If you did the action on Shabbos, let's say like this. Put it this way. Rav Shechter didn't say this was Asur Daraisa. Okay, this is still going to be presumably Asur some sort of Drabanan. So Rav Shechter might agree that this is a problem of grama, but grama is, generally speaking, still Asur on Shabbos. Now, since it's only Drabanan, so sometimes we come up with other reasons to be lenient. in situations of grama, if it's a situation where there's distress, makom tsar, people are suffering, or there's some other type of factors that are important, we will take that into account and sometimes we'll be lenient. But l'chadchila, grama in general is still, we paskin, is still usher on Shabbos, midrabbanan. So I think that's how Rav Shachter presumably would answer that question.
There's a difference between you causing a malacha to begin on Shabbat, and on Shabbat you causing a malacha to begin.
Right. That's true. What he's saying is that according to this opinion of the Rambam, and there were some Achronim that also held this way. There's an Achron called the Machaneh Chaim who also held this way originally, but his opinion was overruled. They would say that it doesn't matter. Any time that the Malacha begins on Shabbos, as long as it can be attributed back to something that you did, that's going to be a problem. Again, logically, I would say the logic falls more on the other side, but once you have the Rambam reading the Gemara that way, then there's what to talk about. Again, we're not going to get into the details now of that, the way the Rambam read it, because I don't have the text of the Rambam in front of me. What'd you say?
I have to read you Masechas Shabbos, because there are many other cases where they speak about something which is going to happen just on Shabbos.
Can you think of any examples offhand? Most of the cases in the Gemara are not like that.
From what I remember, the only reason I can't put something not cooked on the Plata Erev Shabbos is because
That's Shehiya. That's going to be an Isra Durabanan.
Right. Because of Sheva Yochate.
Right.
But if it's not the problem of Sheva Yochate, you are allowed to. Now, the melacha of cooking is only when it goes from the stage before Ba'achal Bet Rosai to after Ba'achal Bet Rosai. Anything which happens until then is not part of the melacha.
So cooking, good point. So we're not going to deal with this now. But Bishul, cooking on Shabbos might be different. Even though on cooking, in the case of cooking, when do you put the food on? Let's say you put the food on Friday afternoon. When does the food actually get cooked? It gets cooked on Shabbos as well. So that may be an Usr Darabanan. That may be an Isra Darabanan. It's not necessarily considered to be an Isra Daraisa. So what you want to say is that even though it's...
You are now. If it went the problem of Shemayah...
Right. Meaning if there's no problem, in a case where there's no problem midrabanan, the Rabbanan concern here, which we're not going to go into now, is essentially that we are afraid that you're going to stoke the coals in the times of Chazal and make it cook a little bit faster. Today the concern would be maybe you'll turn up the fire. Again, there are different ways of avoiding that concern. In the time of Chazal, what they did is either they covered the coals or they took the coals out. Today, essentially, our normative psak is we use a blech or... Maybe a hot plate is also the same thing. That's a bit of a discussion. But if not for the concern of Shema Yechateh, if you avoid that concern, then we would say maybe that it's permitted. The question is why, according to Rav Shachter, the Malacha takes place on Shabbos. So the answer is that Bishul might be something a little bit different. Bishul, the way that Bishul works might be somewhat different than the rest of the Malachas. That has to be discussed. We're not going to do that now, but that's a possible direction which would have to be fleshed out further. Good point. Yeah. That's a question. That's going to be a big question, and there is some debate about that. The question is, depending on what action do you do that causes the thermostat to go on and
even
off?
Even if I don't set, even the thermostat factory set, and I've never touched it, I've never changed nothing. But just by turning it on, the thermostat there at some point, it's going to go on and off.
The question is that going to be something is that going to be automatic, or is that based on something that you do when you open the door and close the door and things like that?
It's a 3-second rule.
But I just turned, all I did was turn the switch on. I turned the air conditioner on. What's the difference between that and the phone?
Isn't there a difference between this, we were discussing, which is you switched it on before Shabbat, and we're going in this case where you've got the timer and it's going to come on Shabbat on its own. But you've done that before Shabbat, so it's the same as the case with the water. Yeah, but that's the same as turning the water on as the case of the Gemara.
Right, I don't think it's really
whereas,
the same.
Whereas the timer is a different scenario. Yeah, the timer, they haven't actually done anything.
We're talking about
the actual melacha starting on Shabbat. So you're starting melacha before Shabbat.
Okay, we're going to have to move on in just another minute. So just any other quick questions?
I have a question.
Okay, we'll save it for now.
Why would you want to send it?
Why would you want to send it? Ask the business people. I don't know.
It's simple, because you went...
The fact that you want to send it problematic, I'm sending it to you because I'm hoping you're going to read it. I'm sending it to the guy because I'm hoping you're going to read it. And I am going to profit... In one way or another,
that's fine.
Understood.
Is it time sensitive that you needed a response from him back before Motzei Shabbat? I think that's an even better question.
Okay, like, good question. Give me another minute. We'll get to that very briefly. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but that's an important point. Let me just finish up here. So Rebelsky responds to Rav Shachter. Rav Shachter, by the way, also wanted to argue, which this part we're not going to read inside, but Rav Shachter wanted to argue based on his argument that sending emails to a place where it's Shabbos. Again, either direction, either where it's Saturday night for you and you send it to Shabbos, or it's Friday afternoon for you and you send it to somewhere where it's Shabbos. But Schechter wanted to argue that sending an email to a server also falls in the same category. He felt that there's makom l'hachmir in that case as well. We won't go through the detailed arguments now.
Actually,
but that's his chumrah. That's Schechter's chumrah.
Sending an email to work. Because, for example, I have a personal account with AOL,
and
that server is outside of Israel.
Okay.
So when I'm actually online with AOL, I'm not technically...
So the question is, what happens when you send an email? In the place where it's Shabbos? What's actually happening there?
The server that I'm working on is in the UK or in the US.
Okay, I understand. I understand. My question is like this. What malacha is taking place every time that you use that server? What malacha is it? Is anything actually happening, or cyberspace? It's all intangible. It's nothing.
Lights are going on. It's electro optics. Lights are going on.
It's electronic. Yeah.
Yeah. So the light's going on in a machine in the US.
You know where it is.
For the machine, it's not
on.
What's in that?
If you consider it off, though, you can see if you don't have to let anything on. So it's in California.
Okay, I hear. Very, very interesting discussion. Again, I can't be machria here. I'll just tell you what Rebelsky responded, and you'll have to choose for yourself which one of them makes more sense in terms of the actual mitzias. Rebelsky responded that he says in the bottom here, Inyan Shon Shabbos, Eino Domel Lamashalo Faneno Klal. He says Rav Schechter's discussion about a timer has absolutely nothing to do with our case at all. Rebelsky and Rav Schechter like to go at it like this. They always do this. They're both tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, but they have very different methods of analyzing questions like this. Rebelsky says, I think what we might say as well, that the case is totally different. In the case of a timer, what we say, I think somebody even mentions this, the case of the timer is when the light goes on, it's ki'ilu, it's as if, it's considered to be as if it went on that I did it. When it goes on, it's considered to be as if I did it because I did something on Friday to make it happen. So maybe we treat it as when it goes off on Shabbos, it's as if I turned it off on Shabbos. But here he says, I'm doing the malacha, I'm doing the actual action which causes it to happen right now in real time, but I'm not in the place where it's Shabbos. So for me, it doesn't matter. Who cares about what's happening? Who cares about the timer? Who cares about whether it's my fault or not my fault? It doesn't matter. Once it's not Shabbos for me, so that the whole thing is totally different than the case where I start the action on Friday, the whole malacha takes place on Shabbos, the timer goes on Shabbos, but it's Shabbos for me also at the same time that the timer goes on. Here is a whole different story. That's what he wants to argue. And again, he deals with some of the other issues here as well. And then the last point about the email, he says about the server for the email, he says that's also irrelevant. His idea here, he says this is a four lines from the bottom here in the first column. In a server, eino nogea, it's not relevant. Ki pashut hu, sheshum davar lo nasa b'shabbos. It's obvious that nothing happens on Shabbos. Lo masa ha-malacha shu etzli b'makom chol, nothing happens where I am right now, where it's not Shabbos right now, v'lo chalos v'gamar malacha, nothing happens, no chalos, no actual effect takes place, no completion of the malacha takes place, ki adayin lo chal, v'lo nigmar shum davar, nothing happens until you turn on your email and you look in your inbox and you see, oh, I have an email. Is that true? I don't know. I can't tell you. That's what Rebelsky says. My impression was that was more accurate, but maybe I'm wrong. Okay. Any disagree? Essentially, what he's saying is that when you send an email, when an email is sent, what takes place in Chutz Laaretz? What takes place in New York or in America on Shabbos when the email is being sent?
You're writing onto a hard drive somewhere.
Say again?
You're writing information onto a hard drive somewhere.
Is that true? Even if your email is totally off, your computer's off.
Yeah, something on the
server. Yeah. It's there already.
Well, no, say again? It's sitting on the server. Somewhere.
The email is there.
Is that a malacha? Is that a malacha? Is any actual malacha violated?
No, the guy's playing BlackBerry. It's going to the BlackBerry. Right, I mean, make it simple.
And if the BlackBerry's gonna, if it's his computer, so it doesn't necessarily have to do anything.
Assuming he has a BlackBerry, make it easier. Assuming it goes right to him, you know, it's not like a server.
Yeah, even en route to wherever it's going to, the endpoint is, it's going to be sitting on the server somewhere temporary.
Well, I don't understand. If you're saying that the server, you can't even use a server, then that means you can't even surf the net on lots of jobs.
Well, yeah, technically,
exactly.
Maybe you shouldn't
agree
to net at all.
Schechter, that's going to be a discussion for a different time. That's not going to be for now.
This will work.
Here. It could be, again, Rosh Hashanah doesn't say that. It could be that Rosh Hashanah would agree with that if you presented it to him that way. I have not asked him myself. The next time I see him, maybe I'll ask him. His bottom line response, let me just be clear here. The bottom line response of Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah agrees, at the end of the day, Rosh Hashanah agrees with Rebelsky's response, but he says he still thinks that there's makom lahachmir. I mean, he still thinks that there is room to make the comparison, and therefore he suggests, l'chatchila, if there's no need for it, if there's a necessity for it, he says that you can do it. But if he says if it's not necessary, you can wait till it's Shabbos is over in New York, wherever the case is, he thinks that there's makom lahachmir in that situation, at least l'chatchila. Okay, let's leave it at that for now. That's one major issue. The second part of that issue, which we're not going to discuss in depth right now because it's really going to be relevant to the other issues in the scenarios, but if you just want to look quickly back to the first slide of that page of the Daf HaKashra, so in question number two, so the question here is, let's say that you're allowed to send a fax or an email to somewhere on where it's Shabbos. So can you fax them a letter if upon reading the fax, they're going to perform the malacha? You ask them to do some sort of action. They say, okay, let's do it. That was David's question before, right? So what's the answer? So the answer is Rebelsky responded in this case, which is essentially, I think, the bottom line, according to most poskim, that it's still permitted. Why is it still permitted? As long as they have the choice of doing it now or doing it tomorrow, then they choose to do it on Shabbos. That's what we call adata d'nafshe. You didn't ask them to do it on Shabbos. That's not a violation of amira la'akum, of asking a goy to do something on Shabbos. So even if you would say that, well, because for where the goy is, it's Shabbos, so even if you'd be machmer and say, I can't ask a goy to do something on Shabbos if it's Shabbos for him and not for me, even if we'd be machmer like that, you still would say that it's permitted because you didn't make him do it on Shabbos. The exception will be, as he points out here, maybe he doesn't point it out, but clearly from what he says, you can derive that if it's something that you say is time sensitive, that it has to be done immediately, then that might be problematic depending on the situation. Assuming that it's not something which, if you look at the rest of his questions here, it's not something which is important in terms of preventing Jews from violating averos or eating non-kosher or something like that. So Rebelsky would say that that would be problematic if you tell them they have to do it on Shabbos. We can discuss this because, again, where you're not in a place where it's Shabbos. The question is whether Amir La'akum, asking a goy to do something, is problematic if where you are it's not Shabbos and where he is it is Shabbos. It's not so simple. But, again, according to Rebelsky, I think it sounds like he might be Machmir in that case. Okay. The last case that he mentions there as well, it's actually 2B.
What about the opposite?
What's the opposite?
I've been recovering Shabbos early. Is that connect one Amir La'akum?
So that's a good question. The answer for that is that it's a machlokas rishonim, I believe, and we pass in the Ramah holds that in that case, that's okay. That's what we call amir l'Yisrael. That if you could even ask a Jew to do it, so then you can also ask a non-Jew to do it as well. That's the psak for early Shabbos. Certainly you're allowed to ask a Jew to do it in that case. For a non-Jew, maybe a non, one second, is a non-Jew different? Ramah definitely says that you can ask a Jew to do something for you if the Jew has not yet accepted Shabbos. And I think we say in that case also that a non-Jew, that are not, you're also allowed to ask a goy, but I might be wrong about that. I need to check that out again.
Unrelated, but that's not what you just said. In the case where you have a person coming from Chul, coming here, and they're keeping 2 days, you're keeping one, is going to ask you to do things?
That's also a big question. That's also a machlokas poskim. Some poskim relate that to the same question of Amir Ali Yisrael, that if we have a concept that if the Jew is allowed to do something because he has not yet accepted Shabbos, it's 6 o'clock, and you already have accepted Shabbos, then since we pass and you're allowed to ask him there, so maybe the same thing would apply here. Others say maybe not. Maybe this is more like the case of Amir La'akum, and they try to differentiate why it's different. It's a whole discussion, which we don't have time for now, but it's a machlokas. I think the majority of poskim actually are machmir there. The majority of poskim are machmir in that case. It's a good question. Rav Shechter was makil there. Rav Shechter held that was okay. I think everybody agrees that if you do it for them without them asking you, that they can get benefit from it. I think that everybody agrees to. Okay, what else do we have here? So the other case here is, let's say that the company consists of non-religious Jews. Can you ask the non-religious Jews, can you send the fax knowing that the non-religious Jews may read the fax on Shabbos? So Rav Belsky's psak here is that that's usur. That's forbidden because you're helping a Jew do a malach on Shabbos. If you know that they're going to read the fax and do something about it, then even if they might wait, but there's a good chance that they might do it right away, so Rav Belsky says that's going to be problematic. Let's get to the second set of scenarios, and we'll discuss this question a little bit more. Yeah. Just
in terms of that question, if you don't know if someone's a Jew or not a Jew, is it like chametz that there's any chance it's a Jew, you'll knock on it, or it's like, you know, one in 60. Some sort of
good question. Let's
how much due diligence do you have to do to determine
right.
whether the person's Jewish?
Good question. So it's going to depend on the situation and on the actual question. It'll depend on a number of factors. When we go to the scenarios, in the case of the scenarios, it might not be so important. We'll have to see that in a minute. In this kind of situation, we would say that the general assumption of most of the poskim is that you can assume that outside of Israel, the person is not Jewish. That's the general assumption that Rav Moshe Feinstein has in a number of different contexts. The question is,
say it
like a Veda.
Yeah. The question is, maybe in certain places, such as New York and certain types of businesses, maybe there's room to be machmir. There may be room to be machmir. Rabbi Bleich from YU. Right. Rabbi Bleich from YU actually wanted to say in a different context. He wanted to suggest that I forgot exactly what his context was. But he wanted to suggest that maybe it would be true. He wants to suggest in the medical context, the medical field, that maybe that you have to be machmer for some of these kinds of situations in New York, because there are certainly at least a significant minority of Jews that are involved in this field, that if you're causing them to do work on Shabbos, that might be problematic. So again, everything has to be sort of worked out. You don't have to take an exact statistic. Again, if you're dealing with outside of New York or other places, certainly in England, I don't know exactly what the statistics are, but generally speaking, the working assumption is that the person is not Jewish. If you suspect that the industry, you know, there's a lot of Jews that work in the banks or that work in this or in that, or you see, as we'll see here, you see one of the names sounds like they're Jewish, then you have to start to be careful. What does that mean? So in the case that we just had of sending the facts, so if there's a good chance that they are going to do they're going to do something with FX on Shabbos, at least according to Rebelsky and many other poskim, you'd have to be machmir. We'll get to some of the other rules when it comes to Lifnei Iver in a few minutes. Let's go to some of the other scenarios here. Let's start with scenario number three. We're going to go backwards here. Scenario number three. I have an employee who is not Shomer Shabbos, but he is aware of Shabbos. I have found out that he likes to catch up on his work on Shabbos and often find emails that he has sent me. Can I benefit from his work? As his manager, what should I do? Do I have to tell him not to work on Shabbos? So what do you think we should say in this case?
You should invite him over to his house for Shabbos.
Oh, great answer. Great answer. The question is there any chance that he'll actually listen?
I should stand there with the parents.
That's what I'm saying, right?
I don't think it matters.
As long as it's not time sensitive,
and you told him to do it on Shabbos.
Okay.
Even if it's time sensitive, but you gave it to him on Wednesday to do it, and he doesn't get to it to Shabbos, that's not your problem either.
Good. Okay.
Can
so let's.
From this work, Monday Shabbos, yes.
Yeah.
It's like visual.
Excellent. Okay. Good. So take a look here in section number three. That's basically the psak that we accept. In section three. So we say Hamavashal b'Shabbos, somebody who cooks on Shabbos, o she'asa achas mishar melachos, or somebody who violates one of the other melachos on Shabbos, b'mezid, if it's intentional, asur lo le'olam u'la'acherim mutar lemotzei Shabbos miyad. The person that does the action is not allowed to get benefit from that action li'olam, forever, but other people, anybody else, is allowed to get benefit from that action lemotzei Shabbos miyad, immediately on motzei Shabbos. I don't think we're going to go through the whole thing here, but the Magen Avraham here has a whole discussion about whether this is true also for the person that the melacha was done for. If I cooked on Shabbos for myself and my whole family and the guests that I was having over, so certainly it's usher for me to use after Shabbos. Is it also usher for my family and my guests if my goal of cooking was to be for them? So the Magen Avraham has a whole discussion. Just give me one second here, which I'm not going to go into now. His bottom line here is that he feels that according to the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, that this should be permitted. If you want to take a look at it yourself, you can. We're not going to read the whole thing inside now, but that's what he paskins here. That's the main reason is that the Mishnah Berurah will explain it. Let's read the Mishnah Berurah inside of the third source. The Mishnah Berurah says, "Mutar lemotzei Shabbos miyad, v'afilu lemishan isbashal bishvilo." Even for the person that you cook it for, it's not for you, for somebody else, is also allowed to use it motzei Shabbos. It doesn't matter who he did it for. There's a halacha that if a non-Jew does work for you on Shabbos, you have to wait the amount of time that it took him to do that work before you can use benefit from his work on motzei Shabbos. If it took him an hour to do whatever he did to cook the food, so then if he cooked it for you on Shabbos, you have to wait for an hour on motzei Shabbos before you can benefit from that food.
It's known in Brooklyn as the Dunkin' Donuts rule. But you had to wait an hour or so until...
Right, so that's an extension of this rule, which we're not going to get into now. The question is... That's true. So that we're not going to get into now. That is true, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. There are some postmen that would say that you don't need to wait that amount because it's not for you directly, it's for a group of people,
But what about in the case where you are receiving the benefits of his work on Shabbat? Because it may be financial.
What do you mean?
Well, because he may be a salesperson who catches up on his work by making some deals and closing some deals, and which puts money into your business on Shabbat.
Okay, so that's a good question. The general rule, we have to figure out how this fits.
The question here just says, I'm reading the emails on Motzei Shabbat. Can I benefit from them? Can I read these emails? But the fact is, he's doing the work on Motzei Shabbat and potentially making money on Motzei Shabbat.
Let's say it's an exchange rate thing, and he closes the deal on Shabbos at a higher exchange rate than after Shabbos is. I mean, that's what you're saying.
In my case,
no. Let's say he closes the deal.
Can I build his time?
Yeah. Bill his time.
Can I build his time to apply?
Exactly.
Double.
You can
do
that.
Same question.
You win. You win both ways.
You can make money on Shabbat.
You
have
somebody want. Regarding this issue, I believe the Rav Ovadia Yosef says that in a case where it's systematic, every Shabbos, this rule wouldn't apply.
Which rule wouldn't apply?
About the Shin Yud Chet that Mutar Lo Tzei Shabbos Miyad.
Really?
Because I had asked. He says you aren't allowed to. Record, he's even speaking, a program broadcast on Shabbos.
Right.
And the question is why? Why can't I be a recorder?
It's a consistent event.
Friday night, I want to watch it once in Shabbos, I recorded it and watch it once in Shabbos.
What's the answer? What reason does he give?
He says you're not allowed to.
I think I remember that tshuva. I remember that tshuva. It's a very famous tshuva. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach also has some discussions about that. I don't remember if his concerns there were his
concerns. As they broadcast it every Shabbos, it's not a one-time event that he cooked for you. It's he's cooking for you every time, and you. By recording it and watching it once in Shabbos, you're
right, so that's a different factor. That we didn't get to that yet.
You're using the whole basis of Maisie.
Meaning what? Explain. What do you mean? Again, the case here is that even if you violated the malacha intentionally, right? If you violated the malacha intentionally, so then anybody else is allowed to benefit from that malacha after Shabbos. Rav Avadia's concern there is not a concern of masa Shabbos. His concern is misayel over avera, that you are going to cause them to to do more averas. That's we're going to discuss in just a second. We'll get to that. All right, that we'll get to. Your questions from before are serious questions, which I think we don't have time for right now. Certainly, for you to, as we mentioned before, schar Shabbos, to earn money on Shabbos is definitely a problem. So if people are working for you on Shabbos and doing things and making money for you off of it, that definitely could be a potential problem. And really, you should try to find a way around that. I'm not sure what the ways would be. We'll have to think about that a little bit, how you can avoid that.
Well, you're making money. I mean, in Ben's case, you're working for a larger company. The company's making money. I mean, you're not. It's not your
purpose. Very indirect.
Okay, so that might be, maybe that would be a little better. If it's more indirect, or if it's the company making money and therefore...
Maybe it was your personal law firm, I mean.
Is this
you know,
the case where he could close the deal on Thursday, or he could close the deal on Shabbos, and he just chose to call him on Shabbos?
So, that goes back to the other question we had before. Again, Masa Shabbos is mutter. You're allowed to get benefit from a malacha done by a Jew on Shabbos. You're allowed to get benefit from that immediately after Shabbos. You also are allowed to get benefit from a non-Jew's work, or even a Jew's work, if... Let's take the case of the non-Jew. You were certainly allowed to get benefit from him also, even if he did it for you, as long as you didn't tell him to do it on Shabbos. He did it on Shabbos, but he didn't have to do it on Shabbos. He could have done it on Thursday. You didn't, as long as you didn't tell him to do it on Shabbos, then that's perfectly permissible to get to derive benefit from that as well. The question is, again, Schar Shabbos, earning money on Shabbos from these things is more, that's more what we call a knas. That's more problematic. The rabbis fines people not getting any money from Shabbos actions. The way out of it, which usually is done, and this again is more relevant to the questions of, let's say, a partnership, a shutfus with you and somebody else who's not Jewish, own a business, and the business is open on Shabbos. The answer is either the non-Jew owns everything that happens on Shabbos, it's all belonging to the non-Jew, that's one way around it, which again has to be figured out exactly how the details of that work in a contract. The other method that it's done is what's called havla'ah, that if you use sums of money that you get the rest of the week, and you sort of lump that together with money that's earned on Shabbos, and it's one large sum together. We don't say, on Shabbos you earned an extra $80, and on Sunday you earned $100. It's not divided up like that. It's all combined together as one large total sum. Then that's also going to be permitted in general.
One of the big questions on this is not so much the work. It's if you send someone to Chutz Laretz, for example, chances are they will want to fly back on Shabbos.
So your responsibility, if you make the flights, you shouldn't make the flight to fly back on Shabbos. If he makes the flights, then you can tell him. Let me just, I'll add this in now also, just
it's
for
cheaper
the,
to stay over Shabbos,
it's cheaper, right? It's always cheap, right? So, I asked Rav David Miller from Gross, I happened to speak to him yesterday, so I asked him about this part of the question, would you have to tell him that he shouldn't work on Shabbos? So I suggested to him, and he sort of agreed that it would be nice, what you should try to do from the perspective of Tochacha, that there is an obligation that you should tell somebody if they're doing something wrong, you should tell them not to do it, especially if you're an employer.
Right, and then you get sued.
One second. So we're not saying that you have to tell them you're not allowed to work on Shabbos. What you could tell them is I would be very happy if you would use your Shabbos as your day off to be with your family. If in the end of the day he chooses for whatever reason not to listen to you and do his work anyway, then that's not your responsibility anymore. There's no problem with that. The same thing presumably will apply in the case of the flights. So again, if you are making the flights for him, you probably should not book his flight on Shabbos. That might be a serious problem with Lifnei Iver. But if you let him choose the flights, meaning tell him choose whatever he wants, you could say, I think by this point already he probably knows that you would prefer that he not do things on Shabbos, but you can make some sort of general statement to that effect one time, and after that he doesn't listen, that's his choice. He chose that on his own.
The fact is that the employer's paying for
right, that's
you say, you
true.
Say, I'll pay for you to be able to do Mechalos Shabbos.
So, as long as you are not the one.
Most employers are pretty good about people coming back on Motzei Shabbat or something.
Of course. I mean, if you say you don't pay for that, of course you pay.
Right, you're talking about a case where the person wants to fly back on Shabbos, right?
Right.
You're talking about the place where he wants to fly back on Shabbos. So, it's a good question.
He can be in the office on Sunday.
I think there are reasons to say that if you just pay the money, but you don't choose the flights, then there's room to say that might not be a problem because he's going to get, meaning the money is not for the fact that he flies on Shabbos. You're paying him the money to fly. Once he chooses when to fly, that's his decision. That's not really exactly what you're telling him to do.
The question is, can
I could see some discussion about that, but I think at the end of the day it's going
to
be okay.
Like, you know, one of the cases of this guy took him to London with me, and it was clear on Shabbos he was going to go sightseeing and all the rest of it, and I authorized his expenses at the end of the day. The question is, do we passively say, like one time we just say, it would be much nicer, blah, 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 or do we have a responsibility to try and obliterate Mechal Shabbos if it's within our jurisdiction somehow?
Why is the situation different? Why is the situation
good
different
question.
From the situation with the email when the work person sends
the
email on Shabbos?
Which scenario? Number two?
Number three.
Okay.
I don't understand what the difference is. You're not telling him when to work. He's working, he's sending you an email on Shabbos. Why is this any different? You're not telling him when to fly. He's choosing when to fly.
Right.
We said in the previous situation that you can benefit from it after Shabbos.
If I know that if I send him an email on Thursday evening, every week he must always on Shabbos, then do I have a responsibility not to send him an email on Thursday evening?
No, because then you might not send it on Tuesday because you want to ask the next Monday.
But once I know he's working.
No, but one time you just say, you know, like my boss actually sent me something on Yom Ha'atzmaut and said to the bottom, said, please note, this shouldn't be dealt with until Thursday. Like, don't feel you have to work now. Right?
Yeah.
I write a lot of employment contracts where the employers will specify that Shabbat is will be their day off. Will be considered their day off.
Yeah, but that's Israeli law, though.
No, it's not a matter of law. That's a matter of
because
policy.
In Israel there's a basic day off. So there might be legal considerations for that.
It doesn't have to be Shabbat.
It has to be Shabbat.
No,
it's
this is
Chok
Shavuot.
What was your question? That he doesn't want to take Shabbos off, or what
right.
was the problem with that?
No, yeah, we have people in our firm. They tell in our firm we're told you can't you shouldn't work on Shabbat.
Yeah.
Sometimes people do, but they're told you shouldn't.
From this perspective, I think that's all that you need to do. As long as you tell them don't work on Shabbos, you're allowed to get hanaf from anything they do, and if they choose to work on Shabbos, that's their concern. The only issue that we have to discuss in some of these other cases here, and maybe we'll come back to some of those questions, is the question of Lifnei Iver. How far do you have to go in, as you mentioned, in preventing them from not violating Shabbos? We'll get to that in just a second. Yeah.
There's 15 Kurdish gyms in Israel. Two of us, two gyms are religious, and the other 13 are not religious whatsoever. And always, I open up my email on Saturday night, there's all kinds of helpful stuff for me that they did over Shabbat.
Right.
So, and it's not just they're not religious, they're tzvonim. They're not religious, you get there. They're Christian television. I can't say anything to them because, one, they won't listen. One, do I have a responsibility to say something? Two, do I have the right to turn a show gig to a mezid? And you know, what's this tochiyah?
There's also an issue, there's a psak, I don't remember who said it, but that somebody like that is in the ghetto of
Tzimushish. Right.
So do I have to say something to them?
For most things, that's true. There may be some exceptions, which we'll see in a second.
What's my responsibility? Do I have a responsibility to say something? Because... Even you said now that maybe you do, but then you may be turning the
shogate to a mezid. So that's the question. In your case, anybody who was brought up to never observe Shabbos, I don't think it's... Yes, it may be true that but at the end of the day we treat them as shoging in regards to certain things. But the bottom line is it's not like somebody who, they're not aware of the halacha. And if they were aware of the halacha, they would still say, okay, I know that that's the halacha and I'm going to violate it anyway. These people don't care. They don't understand what halacha means, meaning it doesn't mean anything to them. So I'm not sure... whether the same rules would apply. All that we were saying is just because we don't want them to think that you are the one that's telling them they should work on Shabbos. That's all we're trying to get out of here. And there may be some people, as you mentioned, there may be some people that would listen. I guess they wouldn't really listen to you. But that's really the main thing. What I meant by tochacha here is that we want to make sure that it's not that you're the one that's causing them to work on Shabbos. You are telling them your responsibility is to make sure that they understand that's better that they don't do that, that you're not asking them to do that. If they choose to do it anyway, then anything that happens based on that is their cheshbon.
That's right, that my parameter, my boundary is that I am not in any way involved, or I'm not perceived to be involved in causing them. Responsibility ends at me. Is what you're saying is my responsibility ends at I'm involved, as opposed to my responsibility is broader, that there is Mechalal Shabbos happening within some form of area which I'm involved in, that's not my business.
Good.
If
so that's
it's under your authority, he's saying.
If it falls under,
yeah.
If actually I could do something to prevent it.
So again, the answer is number one that you can't, as we'll see in just a minute, get to it. In terms of Lifnei Iver, you can't cause them to do something which is forbidden. That's certainly not allowed. What the obligation of tochacha of giving rebuke is an obligation, a general obligation that you are supposed to tell people doing something wrong. If you see them doing something wrong, you should tell them that they're doing something wrong.
Well, that's
now. Second?
That's only if they'll accept it.
Correct. So the halachas of tochacha are a little bit complicated, and usually what we say is if you know that they're not going to listen, then the halacha is that there may be no obligation to give them tochacha. That's a discussion. The Gemara seems to say that maybe you do have to give them today. Maybe if you tell them too many times they shouldn't do it, worse things will happen. Exactly. It'll end up being, the consequences will be worse than had you not said anything to begin with. So that's another aspect of it. The aspect of it that we're discussing here in terms of the business, I think, is just being because it's under your jurisdiction, so we don't want to have your company, so to speak, being involved in any Chil Shabbos, which could be traced back to you. So all that we're saying is that as long as it's clear to the worker that the company is not telling him to work on Shabbos, and the company would prefer that he not work on Shabbos, anything that happens after that would not be your responsibility.
Can we just...
That's the impression.
Can we deal with managers? Let's say you're the worker, and your manager's the one that's Mechal of Shabbos. So I'm assuming from this discussion is that you have no obligation to tell him how to give him tochacha.
It's probably not a good idea.
It's probably not a good idea. Seriously, though. I mean, it's a...
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just go on here, because I want to get to one other... I want to get to one other major issue, which we can really just scratch the surface of, but I want to deal with briefly. That also speaks to some of what we're discussing here. All the other scenarios, scenario number 2, scenario number 4, and scenario number 5. What's the issue in all these scenarios? The problem is you're going to be involved in conference calls that may include non-observant Jews being involved in them. Some of the cases here, I think number 5, is where not only are you going to be involved, but you're the one that's actually requested to make the call in the first place. So the question is, how do we navigate these types of halachic scenarios? Let me just give you first a very, very brief background to the prohibition of lifnei iver. Lifnei iver, lo titen michshol, the idea in the Torah is that you're not allowed to place a stumbling block in front of a blind person, which is understood both in a physical sense, you can't cause somebody to trip if he can't see where he's going. In terms of giving bad advice, that's another discussion that the commentaries have. You can't give somebody bad advice if your intention is to trip them up, to make them do something which they probably would not want to do. And 3, the most halachic definition is that you're not allowed to cause somebody else to violate a mitzvah or an aveira in the Torah. That's also not allowed. That's the general, the most common definition halachically of lifnei iver lo titen michshol. The question is, how far does that go? So if you look very, very quickly in section number 2 here, so the Gemara, this is the classic case in the Gemara, minayin shelo yoshit adam kos shel yayin lenazir. How do you know that a person cannot give a cup of wine to a nazir? A nazir is forbidden to drink that wine. Ve'aver min achai livnei noach. You can't give aver min achai, which is a limb from a living animal, to a ben noach. Ben noach is also not allowed to have aver min achai. Tamalomar livnei iver lo sitein michshol. You're not allowed to give it to him because it's as if you're placing a stumbling block in front of a blind person. So that's the basic definition. That's the basic line in the Gemara about lifnei iver. You can't do something to somebody else that will cause them to violate the prohibition. Now, the most interesting distinction here is in the next line of the Gemara. In this case, though, let's say the case the Gemara is discussing, which we're not going to get into now, the context of this Gemara is a case where if you don't give him that cup of wine or other prohibited type of food, then he's going to take it anyway. So the Gemara says, "V'ka'aver mishum lifnei iver lo sitein michshol." You still violate the prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. So the Gemara, again, I cut you right in the middle of the discussion here. We don't have to go through the rest of the background to understand the main points for us. The Gemara's response is, "Hachav mayaskin and dekai betrei ibra denara." That the cases that you're talking about people that stand on two sides of the rivers. What's the going on here? So the idea of trei ibra denara, two sides of the river, essentially is like this: the person that has the wine, let's say, is on one side of the river. The Nazir is on the second side of the river. There's absolutely no way that the Nazir is going to be able to get wine unless you cross the river and give it to him. That's trei ibra denara. Your role in causing him to violate the prohibition is crucial. He can't do it without you. Chad ibra denara, the other example, is the case where if you would not give it to him, he will get it with some other means by himself. That's the other case. And what the Gemara is assuming here, according to this opinion in the Gemara, which is Rabbi Nassan, the Gemara earlier discussed, is that the only biblical violation of lifnei iver takes place if your participation is crucial, if it's trei ibra denara, if he can't get it unless you cross the river and give it to him. But in the case where he could get it on his own, then that is not a biblical violation of lifnei iver. It's only something, either permitted or it's asur midrabbanan.
Could or would?
Could or would. What do you mean?
He would definitely go get it on his own without you helping, or that he just could, because it happens to be the available solid.
That he could. Maybe we'll come back to that in just a second. So how does that work? We're not going to get into all the details here. It's a big yeah.
Definitely, would.
Second.
Correct.
On your side of the river, there's another cup of wine that if
one cup of wine,
right. Right. So. Right, so in the case where I give the Nazir the cup of wine, so if he could have gotten the cup of wine somewhere else down the block, then I may not violate lifnei iver d'oraisa. I only violate either nothing or lifnei iver d'rabbanan, a rabbinic.
Even if he could have gotten the cup which I am holding. Even if he could have gotten the wine I am holding.
Right, as long as he could have gotten the wine somewhere else.
Another one.
Exactly. That's a major, major principle within lifnei iver. The halacha l'masa psak is not so clear. We're not going to read this inside now, but in the Shulchan Aruch, in the second source here, so the Ramah here quotes opinions which hold that if it's what we call chad ibra denara, if he could have gotten it somewhere else, that it's mutter. That it's not even lifnei iver to give him the cup of wine at all. You're allowed to actually give the nazir the cup of wine if he could have gotten it somewhere else. But the Rama says v'chol baal nefesh yachmir la'atzmo. That's every baal nefesh, somebody who's very careful about his halachic observance, he should be machmir based on the other rishonim that say that that's still asr midrabbanan. The bottom line psak, which we don't have time to get into the reasons for it now, there's a big contradiction in the Rishonim here about this type of situation. The bottom line is that we are machmir, that is at least in Isser Durabbanan. If he could have gotten it somewhere else, then you still cannot give it to him. That's still an Isser Durabbanan. However, once it's Durabbanan, there are other factors that we bring in that poskim are willing to be a little bit more lenient for. I'll just mention some of them briefly, but again, the issue of the favor is very complicated, and there's not one section in the Shulchan Aruch that deals with these points. It's scattered over a lot of different cases, and every case is very, very individual and very complex. I'll just throw at you a few factors that the poskim sometimes bring in that some poskim suggest as being factors for leniency. If we have a case where he can get it on his own, again, this is very relevant for tons of situations. Let's say where you own a clothing store or other things where the clothing is not so tsanua. That's one discussion. Maybe it's a problem, maybe it's not. Rav Avadya has a tshuva about that as well. Selling food on a fast day or selling meat during the 9 days. Rav Avadya has a tshuva about that as well. All these kinds of situations or business types of situations like we have here. If you are, let's say, causing somebody else, a worker, to violate Shabbos by, let's say, we'll discuss this in just a second, but you're going to give him a call. You're going to give him a call to discuss the deal if he would have been working anyway, even if had you not called him. What's the halacha? Let's say the case is where you want somebody who's not from to come to shul to participate in the davening. If you hadn't asked him to come to shul, he'll drive to shul, but if you hadn't asked him, he'll drive to the movies. All of these are included in this situation where even had you not asked him to do something which violates an avera, he's going to do it anyway in some other form. So that's going to be, we pass in, is asr drabbanan. It's asr drabbanan, what we call misayel over avera. You are helping somebody do an avera. But there are other factors to consider which might make it permitted. One factor that some poskim say is that as long as the avera is done later, you offer him the possibility of doing it, you tell him come for Shabbos, you ask him to do whatever it is right now, he doesn't actually do it until a couple hours later. If the actual masa takes place later, some poskim suggest that maybe that's not a problem of lifnei iver because maybe there's a chance that he won't do it. It's a very complicated issue which we don't have time to get into now, but that's one possible approach for leniency. There's another very interesting approach for leniency that some poskim have, which is that if it's something that is to his benefit, meaning Rav Sternbach, I think, suggests this, that maybe if you invite him for Shabbos, because it's to his benefit to come for Shabbos, it's something that will help him to come. He'll be able to do something positive, to make Kiddush or to hear davening, etc., etc. Maybe that's another factor to consider, that it's not really lifnei iver, because you're not causing him a stumbling. You're not causing him to trip. You're helping him. It's better that he should drive to shul and daven with a minyan than it is to drive to the movies. So maybe that's also another factor to consider. Generally, what poskim do in these situations is they try to combine a number of the leniencies together. They won't usually use any leniency by itself. They'll try to combine another one together. Another leniency here is in the Shach, the third source in section 2. The Shach says, Masha inkin ovid kochavim v'Yisrael mumar she'eno chayav l'hafrisho, that if you talk about Yisrael mumar, if the Jew is going to do it anyway, and you ask him to do it, then maybe the halacha is that it doesn't is not necessarily a problem. That is a question whether that applies to a Tinok Shinishba. Today, somebody's not a mumar. They don't actually reject Judaism. They never grew up with it. They never knew about it. They know in their heads, they know what it is, but they're not actually seriously thinking about keeping it and rejecting it. So some say that the Shach here also applies in that situation. If you're dealing with a person who's not religious and he is going to do it, he's going to do something anyway, so then that also may be a grounds for leniency that you can cause him to violate something, again, if it's for a good reason. It's another grounds for leniency. Some disagree, but this is another factor to consider. Yes, that's a question, which again is a bit complicated. Mm-hmm. Some Rishonim say that if the Isser that he's violating is only Midrabanan, then that also makes it more lenient. And sometimes you can combine together, let's say it's only with Ne'iva Drabanan. It's a case where he'll do it on his own anyway. Right? He'll do it on his own anyway. And the prohibition that he's violating is only Midrabanan to begin with. Some poskim say that that's okay. Others are a little more machmir. Let's go to these scenarios and we'll call it a night. So in all of these cases, there's a major difference between some of these cases, I guess some of the cases, and the lifnei iver here. If you are not the one that's causing the call, okay, let's say they're calling you. You are involved in the conference call, but they're calling you, and this Jew happens to be on the conference call. Did you do anything wrong? Is that lifnei iver for you in any form? So the answer is probably not. Why not? Because, yes, you're participating in the call, but as long as you're not the one that made the call, you had absolutely nothing to do
with this. No, but usually
this,
you're
yeah.
calling into a conference call.
Okay.
Everyone calls in on their own.
Fine.
I'm saying it's not that
that's
you're
not a direct problem with Lifnei Iver in any form, as long as you are not the one that caused him to call. If you're the one that arranged the conference call, you instructed everybody to
okay.
call at this and this time, including somebody that you suspect might be Jewish, that's going to be a problem.
Because you're the peon, you just get told when to call.
Correct. So that's probably going to be okay. That's going to take care of scenario number two. Scenario number two presumably will be okay as long as you are not the one that's initiating the call. In scenario number four, it'll probably be the same thing. As long as you're not the one that's initiating the call, that presumably will be okay. In scenario number five, you're going to have more of a problem, because in scenario number five, the coworker, this is a shaila that I actually got here in Motzei Yom Tov, Motzei Pesach. Somebody asked me this exact question. So that was more of a problem, because if you're the one, if he's asking you to call him, then you are calling him, and then he's going to pick up the phone. So, was he working anyway during that time? He probably was working anyway. He probably was on the phone, on the computer. So it's probably not midoraisa. It's probably only midorabanan, because he was working anyway. You're not causing him to work. So that makes it misayeya. But the question is still, if you are calling and he's answering the phone and you're actively causing him to pick up the phone, that still may be a serious problem of misayela over avera, which may still be midorabanan. Now, if you take the shachir and say, well, he's doing it anyway, he's a mummer, he couldn't care less about the fact that there's a halacha. Again, maybe there's grounds to be lenient, but as we mentioned before,
yeah, I was going
to
say.
One second. So that's another factor to consider, that since it's Yom Tov Sheni, so the Isser to begin with is only Midrabanan. Those are two other factors to consider in that case. Bishas of the Chak, there may be room to be Mekil in that kind of situation for those two factors. L'chadchila, because all these kulas are not really so clear and so self-evident in the Makoros, that everybody agrees to them, every single one of them is a Machlokes. So certainly, if you're able to, it's better to be Machmir. What does that mean? So all you have to do, what I told him to do in this case, was flip it. Basically, email him back. Tell him, I'm happy to speak to you anytime in the next couple days that you want. Call me. And assuming you don't get in too much trouble, as long as he calls you, so what happens? You pick up the phone. Once he's already on the phone, many poskim say that you are not causing him to do any more malacha by talking to you on the phone than he already did by dialing the number. The main malacha is the dialing, picking up the phone,
yeah,
listening to the dial tone, and dialing the number. But you didn't tell him.
You didn't tell him to call today.
You didn't tell him to call today.
It says here, he sends me an email on 7th day past,
right,
saying I must call him the next day.
Right.
Which is Yom Tov Sheni.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So at the end of 7th day Pesach, I send him an email saying, you call me.
Yeah, but not necessarily not on that day.
The way I said it was call me anytime in the next couple days.
Oh, okay.
So you're not actually telling him to call you on Yom Tov Sheni. If you told him to call on Yom Tov Sheni, that would be presumably more of a problem. Again, there is room to be makel, but it's...
But this is different. I mean, Yom Tov Sheni, if you're Israeli anyway, you don't have the...
So that was interesting.
And even if you were in Aretz, you wouldn't have.
In this Shiloh, the guy happened to have been somebody who was Israeli, but the way that he described it to me was that the guy had a wife here, he divorced his wife, he wasn't coming back. If he's not coming back, even though he might think he's Israeli, but the halacha
no,
is probably not
is,
considered
no,
to be.
No, I'm saying you're Israeli, right?
So, what?
So you don't have the issue of Yom Tov Sheni.
Yeah, but it's still...
If you were in Chutz La'aretz,
yeah,
you wouldn't have Yom Tov Sheni either.
If for you, it's not a promise for him.
Even for a Nazi,
you're not a Nazi.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
What
so
if
that's
false and he insists.
So then that's when maybe you have to use some of these kulas, but you have to be careful. You got to be careful. Okay, so ideally that's the bottom line. You should try to get him to call you. Or Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that as long as he's already making the call, once you speak on the phone afterwards, there might be you may not be violating any extra malacha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Shukran, everyone.
Yeah.
Two
things.
Yeah.
Confidentiality.
Okay. I don't remember.